Do not forsake your mother's teaching. A Mother's Day message from Proverbs chapter 1, verses 7 through 9. This message by Pastor Rod Harris was delivered at Trinity Baptist Church on Sunday morning, May the 11th, 2008.
Okay, it is Mother's Day, so Mom, stand up. We want to recognize you. So if you're a mom, you need to stand. All right. Thank you. It's a tough job, and I know because I did it. When I was in seminary and we had Zach, I was mom. She worked. She needed to bring home bread for the family, and so I went to school and I was mom. So I know how tough a job it is. And I'm glad it only lasted a couple of months for me. Mother's Day. You know what that means? It means our minds are photo albums. Now what you found this morning is you thought about it. Didn't you see all kinds of images? You thought back through all kinds of things. And the funny thing is, all those images, some of them are in color. And some of them are black and white. Some of those images are a mom with a crowded kitchen and an overflowing dining room and their kids and grandkids and so many people there, and mom is just running back and forth. Not ever sitting down because she's got to make sure that everybody has what they need, what they might need or what they could possibly ever want before mom would take her seat. One of the images I have in my mind is a mom, battle-worn and tired, sitting in a chair in the wee hours of the morning, cradling a sick child. Moms. All kinds of memories. I think of mom fighting the tears, trying to keep the tears away, because that child who just yesterday colored on the wall with a permanent marker and ate out of the dog's bowl is walking down the aisle to join their life to another. For some of us, that photo album includes our standing at a lonely graveside as we bid farewell to the one who gave us life. Memories, stories, images of tragedy and triumph, of laughter and tears. And there's one common thread running through all of that. That's mom. Mom's presence. Now, Billy Sunday was the great evangelist of the late 19th, early 20th century, and Billy Sunday made a statement. Billy Sunday said, "Give a boy a godly mother, and any old stick will do for a dad." Well, I think Brother Sunday overstated things just a bit. I think maybe he went just a little too far, but at the same time, I don't think we can overestimate the role that mom played. Especially a godly mom, one who loved her children, prayed for her children, gave herself to her children. See, I don't think we can overestimate the role of family and its importance. Because the family is the basic unit of society. And the condition of the family directly impacts and affects the world in which we live. The state of the culture is largely determined by the state of the family. That's why family is important. That's why family matters. And that's why we, as the people of God, are concerned about family. That's why we speak out on issues related to the family. That's why we want to bring family together to worship. That's why we want to instruct children in the things of God. It's why we want to teach parents to be good and godly parents, because we believe the family's that important. And we believe it's the calling of God on our lives to invest ourselves in families. Today we witness regular attacks on the family. There are those who want to redefine family. There are those who want to say family isn't what you've always thought it was. It's not a matter of a mom and a dad and some children living together in a home. We need to understand it in far different terms. There are those who want to say family is just any group of people that decide to live together in any kind of relationship. There are those who seek to undermine the family in law and legislation. Today, I want to take just a moment to talk about family. And I want to use as a jumping off point Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7, down through verse 9. And I say jumping off point or springboard because I'm not going to do what I normally do, because I want to talk about a subject today. I want to talk about family. Here are the words of Solomon, the king of Israel. Now, he was a king. He ruled during a time of great prosperity. He was king during Israel's golden age. He was the son of Israel's greatest king. Whenever he entered a room, people bowed in his presence. When he spoke, nations responded. But what did he do when his mother entered the room? Listen to this word from 1 Kings chapter 2 and verse 19. So Bathsheba went to King Solomon to speak to him on behalf of Adonijah. And the king rose to meet her and bowed down to her. And then he set his throne and had a seat brought for the king's mother, and she sat on his right. So he's a king, but even kings stoop when mom enters the room. Even kings bow before their mother. Now I want you to hear these words from King Solomon. He was not a perfect man. He was a man that fell into great sin, and yet he was greatly used of God and guided by the Spirit of God in writing these words. God guided him in giving us words of wisdom, words to live by. He says, beginning in verse 7 of chapter 1, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. For they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck." I want to use this to talk about principles related to family. Some advice for families. Now, we live in a day when there's no shortage of advice. There's no shortage of advice for families. Go to any bookstore and you're going to find a whole shelf full of books related to family and advice to family. You got the internet and you can find all kinds of advice on the internet about family. Everything related to the family. If you have a question, if you have a concern, if you have an interest in any area, you're going to be able to find all kinds of sources and materials. Why, you can even turn on your television. There are all kinds of programs that are out there to guide you and to give you great insight and understanding about family and how to live. I mean, after all, you've got Oprah. You've got the Jerry Springer show. You've got all these shows. Dr. Phil is there to guide you and to give you wisdom and insight. Of course, the problem with most of that is it's godless. It's not going to come from the perspective of what does God say? What do the Scriptures say to us with regard to the family? And that's the issue that matters to us as the people of God. It isn't that. There's nothing that can be learned from any other source, but we always want to know, what did God say about this? What does the Lord say to His people? How has the Lord instructed His people about living in family and living our lives together? There are four things I'm going to call to your attention as we just think for a moment this morning about family. And where I want to begin is at the beginning, with the fact that God created and ordained the family. That's our starting point, to understand that family was God's idea. The whole thing came from Him, and Solomon begins this book of instruction with the given that there is a family. I mean, that was a given in his thinking. He didn't have to establish the need for home and for a mother and for a father and there to be a family unit where there is cohesion and where there is understanding and where there is a loving environment, because it was a given to him. It was assumed. It was accepted. But that's no longer the case. So let's go back to the beginning, to the very beginning in the book of Genesis. And we find in Genesis 1, 26 through 28, the Lord said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness. And so he created them male and female in his own image and his own likeness. So we go back to the very beginning, and God decided that he would create a world, and as a part of that creation, that he would make man and woman. And they are created in his image and his likeness. We then go into chapter 2, because in chapter 1 he said, create man in our own image and our own likeness. And so he created them, male and female, created he them, and he instructed them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Now, how are they to do that? Was it just through indiscriminate getting together? Was it just through this man and that woman get together for the sole purpose of creating a baby? And then maybe go on to another and then another. How were they to be fruitful and multiply? You go into chapter 2 and he makes it real clear. For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and the two shall cleave to one another. God intended that this being fruitful and multiplying and filling the earth and subduing it and ruling over it was to be done in the context of family. So what I'm trying to get us to understand is to see that family is not a matter of societal evolution. It's not a matter that through trial and error, human beings came to the idea that, you know what, family seems to work better than any of the other things we tried. It's not a matter of trial and error. It's not a matter of experimentation. It was God's design from the beginning. That's why it matters. That's why it's so important. That's why we in the church speak to the issue the way that we do, because we understand that it is foundational, it is fundamental to what God intended from the very beginning. That a man and a woman were to come together in a covenant relationship that is a profound relationship. That this was to be a union between one man and one woman. It was to be a one flesh kind of relationship where the two become one. And the word that's used for one flesh means to become a single organism. That they are to come together in such a way that these two are no longer two separate, but they're one. The one flesh relationship spoken of in the book of Genesis is not merely a euphemism for sexual relations. It's far deeper and more profound than that. What God is saying is, here's my design. My program, my will is that a man and a woman would come together in such a way that they are no longer complete apart from each other. They have become one, inseparable, undivided. That's God's ideal. That's His strategy. That's His design. It is an exclusive and permanent relationship. Because the whole language implies that if the two become one, if you pull that apart, if you break that apart, it never comes apart in two clean pieces. There is a tearing away. There is a destroying of the core and the essence. I know we live in a fallen world. And I know the realities of a fallen world is divorce is a reality and many have had to deal with it. And I want you to understand that God's grace is sufficient, that there is life and love and fulfillment and purpose and God's grace beyond that. Okay? But God's design has always been for a man and woman to come together in a permanent relationship. Because whenever divorce comes, and I don't care what the reason for it is, you don't leave that whole. You lose part of yourself in that. And it's destructive. And that's one of the reasons why God says, I hate divorce. It's not because He's a cosmic killjoy. It's not because He says, you know what, I think people are going to do this, so I think I'll tell them I hate it. He hates it because it's destructive and harmful. to His people, to His creation. God intends it to be a permanent, exclusive, loving relationship where there is mutual support and there is mutual nurturing. It is a sacrificial and exclusive union. Family is God's idea, and His idea from the beginning was a man and woman in love passionately with one another so that they sacrificially commit themselves to one another. And it's to be at the heart of family. Why is it that the church speaks so vehemently about the need for marriage? Why can't two people just live together? Why do we need a piece of paper? We love one another. We don't need that. Why does the family say, yes, you do? Why does the church say, yes, you do? Because we understand God's intent is for there to be a formal covenant relationship. And why does that matter? And why is that so significant? The answer is found in the New Testament. In the book of Ephesians. In Ephesians chapter 5, I want you to listen to these verses. Ephesians 5, beginning at verse 30. Because we are members of His body, therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. He's quoting from the Genesis passage. Why? This mystery is profound, and I'm saying that it refers to Christ and His church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Why does it matter? Because marriage is to be a picture of Christ and His love for His church. And whenever we make light of it, and whenever we treat it as a common thing, we are blaspheming our God. That's why it matters. It's not the piece of paper. It's the commitment that reflects the permanent, exclusive, sacrificial picture of what God has done for us in the person of Christ. And your marriage is supposed to be a reflection of that and a picture of that, because it's been God's intent from the very beginning. That's why family matters. That's why we speak the way we do. That's why we're so adamant about it. It was a given in Solomon's day. He accepted that it was going to be there. He accepted that there was this covenant relationship. He accepted there was a mom and a dad and a child was going to be in that environment. It's no longer the case in our day. Therefore, we must fight to maintain the standard. We must hold high the banner, and we cannot afford to compromise, because it goes to the heart of the gospel and what we're called to do and to be as His church. Understand that family is God's intent. And understand that at the heart of the family, there is to be this love relationship of a man and a woman committed to one another. In such a way that when a man and a woman stand before a group of people and confess their love and their commitment to one another, they enter into a new life where there is a new priority and a new primary relationship and responsibility. And that is to one another. That when a man and a woman stand before me in this church and take their vow before God and those gathered, they are saying, I have a new loyalty that is first place in my heart outside of Christ. Next to that, there is no person, there is no one, there is no thing more vital or important to me than my spouse. And that's not just until children come along. That is for the rest of their days. Moms and dads are to love each other first and their children second. Because the greatest thing that any father can do for their children is to passionately, without apology and without shame, love their mother. And the greatest thing a mother will ever do for a child is love their father passionately. That's their responsibility. That's the starting point, but it doesn't end there. Second, God intends that the family shape and mold our children's worldview. That's what Solomon is speaking of in this passage. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. Dad is supposed to be an instructor and mother is supposed to be a teacher because the home is supposed to be a school. I'm not saying that every home is to be a home school. I'm not saying that we're supposed to turn our back on the education system and the public school and we only school at home. That's not what I'm talking about. I am saying your home is supposed to be a school with mom and dad instructing their children in life, in the skill of living. The point is that we're not just to be fruitful and to multiply and to fill the earth. We are to populate the earth with God-fearing people. People who know, who understand, who love, and who serve the true and the living God. Your home is to be a laboratory where your kids learn to live in this world and prepare for the world yet to come. That's God's design. That's God's intent. So I want to ask you, have you given much thought to that lately? Has it even crossed your mind in recent days that your responsibility to your children is that you instruct them in life, in particular in the things of God, so that they might grow up to be godly young people and then godly adults? Religious teaching is what Solomon has in mind in verse 8. Mom, Dad, that's your job. The church is certainly here to help you. We're certainly here to reinforce, but it's not the church's job. It's your job. It's not the Sunday school teacher's job. It's your job. It's not the youth director's job. It's your job to see to it that your children are brought up in the fear and the admonition of the Lord. If you pawn that off on someone else, you've abdicated your chief responsibility. If you're uncertain about that, let me call your attention to another passage in the Old Testament, in Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning at verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk to them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. What is he saying? He's saying, Mom and Dad, it's your job to teach your kids about life. In particular, about life in the Lord. In the routine of life, when you're sitting around the house, when you're walking down the road, when you're going to bed at night, when you're getting up in the morning, every opportunity is a teaching moment for you to instruct your children in word and in deed about the things of God. What I'm saying is, don't come to the church and say, do something about my child. If you're not living the faith before them, then don't expect them to just take what they get at church and start living godly lives. They need to see it reflected in their home, as well as taught in their home and taught in their church. Because that's our responsibility together. And what's the foundation of this instruction? It's clear in verse 7. The fear of the Lord. The fear of God. And that doesn't mean that they are terrified, that they won't lift their eyes and they won't look to Him. It means reverence. The beginning of wisdom for your child is that they have a deep reverence for God and the things of God. Your home is not just a place for your child to learn how to hold a spoon, or how to tie their shoes, or to know what their colors are, or to say thank you and please, but to learn to revere God Your home is to be a school where they not only learn to respect and revere God, but they are in your home to learn a love for the church. And sometimes that's hard. Because the church is filled with imperfect people, and so imperfect things happen. Harmful, hurtful things can happen in the church. But it's your responsibility to teach your children to love the church in spite of its flaws. Because the church is the bride of Christ. And we love Christ and we love His bride as well. It's part of your job. It's part of your responsibility. To teach your children through word and through your own actions to stand in awe of the God who is. To trust Him with your life and with your future. And to serve Him. They need to see that in your life. That way it's communicated to theirs. This whole thing about family is God's idea, and He expects the family to shape your child's worldview. Third, God expects children to joyfully submit to their parents' instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Solomon is speaking to the two most common temptations regarding rebellion. One when we're at home and the other when we leave home. When we're at home, the great danger, the great temptation is that we turn a deaf ear to the things of God. We hear the instruction of the Lord. We hear our Father's instruction about godly matters and godly things. And it goes in this ear and it comes out the other. And I give no weight to it. I give no thought to it. That's the temptation when I'm at home. I may have a drug problem and that my parents drug me to church every time the doors were open, but I don't have to listen. That's the great temptation, to turn a deaf ear, to not hear the instruction. But the other great fear is that you heard it, because God bless them, they came back at you again and again and again and again and again, and you heard it, but whenever you left the home, you forsook it, you threw it off and said, I don't have to live that. My son, hear your father's instruction. Don't forsake your mother's teaching. God thinks that's pretty important. If you go back to Exodus 20, you'll find it made the top 10 in the Ten Commandments about what a dangerous thing it is to not respect your parents and not obey. If you do what they tell you, you'll live long in the land. If not, God expects children to joyfully submit to their parents' instruction. Why? Not because they're submitting to mom and dad, but they're submitting to Christ through mom and dad. Because when they reject mom and dad, they're not just rejecting mom and dad, they're rejecting God. That's why it matters. Family's God's idea. He expects the family to shape the worldview. He expects children to joyfully submit to their parents' instruction. And finally, God promises blessing in response to obedience. He says in verse 9 that it's the instruction, the teaching, are gifts, and their prizes signifying triumph, celebration, and joy. They are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. That's consistently the message of Scripture. We find it in Proverbs 14, 26 and 27, and 19 and verse 23, and in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 2, that God promises His blessing when we respond with honor and respect toward our parents, because we recognize the family is God's gift and we yield to His order in our lives. Today's Mother's Day. And if you were blessed because you had a godly heritage passed on to you from your mother, you need to rejoice today and give thanks. And if mom is still around where you can do it, you need to tell her today that you value the heritage that she gave to you. If you're a mom or a dad, you need to commit yourself today to say, I want to leave that legacy for my children and my grandchildren. I want to take seriously my responsibility to model, to instruct, and to live my faith so that it passes on from me to my children and my children's children. Understand, it's God's idea. And He's given us ample instruction about how to live it. The issue is, will we commit ourselves to it? Let's pray together.
You've been listening to a Plowman podcast. Find us on the web at theplowman.org. The Plowman features the preaching ministry of Rod Harris, pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, located at the corner of 41st and Union. To learn more about the ministries at Trinity Baptist Church, visit us on the web at www.tbctulsa.org.